Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Back in Starkville after an eventful weekend in Houston. It's a grind, man. It really is. It's not like the typical weekend, right? I mean, because like you go to a road series and you get three games against the same team. It's a much different dynamic when you have these round robin events. You know, you got a lot of previews you got to write. You got a lot of coaches you got to talk to. And so we did our best to ramp up our coverage this weekend to kind of give you unprecedented access to what was going on. The games did not go the way we had hoped they would go. Difficult week for Mississippi State. We're going to kind of break that down, kind of look ahead. And we'll talk some basketball, too. I owe you guys a show that I'll make it up to you at some point. The reason I didn't record is stay with my sister-in-law, and I got a chance to kind of hang with my nephews, my twin nephews, who are now 13. And, you know, and so I didn't feel right about it. You know, it's like, hey, the few hours that I'm there a day, I didn't want to allocate time because I get to see those guys like once every couple of years. And so that's kind of how things went. So I apologize for those of you that were disappointed. I got several messages about it, but I'll make it up to you at some point. This week's going to be difficult. Matter of fact, on Wednesday, I'm going to do my best to get the show. We may even record it Tuesday night, but we'll get the show up for you on Wednesday. Pretty early because I got to head south, speaking at my high school on Thursday. I'm pretty jacked about that. And then we'll have a home series. So four home games this week, and we need to win all four of them. I've got some things to say. I got some things that I think we should change. I'll give you my honest opinion about that. There's some things that are good, some things that are not so good. And anytime that we go 2-2 in a week, we kind of get a little bit, We go 1-3 in a week, we get really upset. And so that's where we are. We all want Mississippi State to win. I say we all do. The overwhelming majority of us do. Some people revel in misery, so they're really happy right now. So we're going to get into that. We're going to look back at the weekend that was in men's and women's basketball. We're going to look ahead at the women's SEC tournament. And a big week ahead for Mississippi State men's basketball. Certainly need to at least go 1-1, man. But if we could go 2-0, man, that would do so much for us. I mean, we feel good about where we are, but you start thinking about you close out, you know, winning 3 in a row, you beat Texas, you win at Arkansas. It puts you in a much better situation. And so that's what we're hoping for. So we're going to break that down. We'll kind of look ahead to what's coming up for us. And great to meet so many of you out there in Houston. And thanks to everybody that turned out to come support the Diamond Dogs. It's a big thing, man. I love, number one, going on the road. I love road baseball. But there's so many of you that it's just so difficult to get back to Starkville regularly. And so when the show goes on the road to your town, you guys turn out. And I saw Bootsy Copeland and Julie Bishop and the whole Madison crew on the way down. And then once I got to the event, so many great Bulldogs out there that support Mississippi State Athletics through thick and thin. I got some things to say today that may hurt some feelings. And let me look around here and see if I can't find some sympathy in advance. None over there. None over there either. I guess we're not going to have any. But I am a principles before personalities person. It's one of the things that I have learned through all these years of recovery, is to place principles before personalities. There's a lot of people that operate the other way, and they're wrong. I'll just kind of say it for what it is. You're wrong. right? Wrong. And you can sit in your wrongness, right? And it's important to kind of understand that there is an expectation of people. Most people don't do well with expectations. No one could ever expect more from me than I expect from myself. I have an obligation to all of you. It's one of the reasons that I went down to Houston and I worked so hard and then raced back to ensure that we could get the day going. Today is kind of a schedule resetting day for me, but I wanted to go ahead and get the show knocked out because I was unable to record over the weekend. But, you know, when people have expectations, they got to meet those expectations. And I mean that as honestly and frankly as I can. And I'm a firm believer in accountability. There are a lot of people that claim to be and really aren't, right? I mean, they want other people to be held accountable, but not them, right? That's an important aspect of it. But I think accountability for all. I want everybody to get credit for everything that they've ever done, good, bad, or indifferent. And I don't want anybody on the Mississippi State campus in any capacity that doesn't believe it is the best job they have ever had to date, right? I understand there's some ambitious people out there, and you need a mix of those, and we can't just have, you know, a staff full of lifers. You know, you need some people out there that are ambitious because they're going to come in here and work hard and try to get to the next stop. And while we're sad to see them go, we understand that that's a part of life. But there's some other people that, you know, it's so interesting. Like I read a lot of social media commentary. It's kind of how I wind down at times. But I read a lot of people that are fairly mediocre that use the whole phrase of, you know, you're willing to accept mediocrity. Well, no, I'm not. I want to have a dominant baseball program. And I sat there over the weekend and I watched Tennessee play three games. And watched Texas A&M play two. We're a better team than Texas A&M. I think we've got a better culture than Texas A&M. But I'm envious of Tennessee. And one, I had a discussion this morning with Bo Bounds off air. And that's one of the things that we kind of talked about. The thing about Tennessee that I admire, and there are many things, but the winning is a byproduct of these things. A lot of people don't like the fact that they're so brash. And you know what? That's tough. You know, that's just part of it. But the thing that I have seen, and I had this discussion with Kendall Rogers, when Tony first got there, it was basically home run derby. Like if they couldn't hit jacks, they lost. And so when they ran into good pitching, they lost. They went to Omaha in 19, I guess it was. And that ballpark absolutely swallowed them whole because they couldn't hit jacks. And so they get beat. At some points, you have to play baseball. What we have seen happen in recent years in Knoxville is they have learned to play baseball. They have recruited players to play baseball. And it's not just, hey, they got the biggest arms and they got the biggest sticks. That's a fundamentally sound baseball team, kids. And the thing that stands out to me about them is they have a real swagger. And I don't mean that in the negative connotation. Those guys expect to win. They carry themselves as winners. When one of them makes a play, they all celebrate making said play. There is an expectation for excellence there. And that's the reason they won a national championship. It's true. And so while you may not like all their antics, that's a good baseball team. And yes, they play in a very offensive-friendly ballpark. They do. It's a little tougher to hit it out at night to left when the cold mountain air begins to kind of seep its way into the valley. But they are a very good baseball team. Had a chance to visit with Tony post-game. They won. And I'm impressed with what they have done. And that's one of the things that I think about that I'm envious about is the fact that there are so many people involved with Tennessee baseball that have an expectation for winning. And that's, you can't just have the expectation. You've got to have the commitment to win. And I think they have it. And that's one of the things that we're working to recapture. But, yeah, we got some things we got to fix. We do. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. I plan to have some Bulldog Burger Company this week while I'm in town. Looking forward to that. It'll cure what ails you, right? And there's just something about being home, right? It's when you go on the road, it makes you miss home. You know, and I do. Like, I enjoy road baseball, but I enjoy being home. And it makes me appreciate all the things about Starkville that make it so great. One of those things is Bulldog Burger Company, because there is a consistency there. I don't just eat for survival. I like to eat for enjoyment, right? And I enjoy having a meal at Bulldog Burger Company. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Find a great restaurant quality hamburger that fits your craving of the day. I had the Pimentology I had bacon the other day. I promised you kids I would do that. I did. I don't know what I'm going to have this week, but I'm going to have it again. I'm going to get that chocolate shake to go too, because I like to ride that ride home with a smile. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. Let's take a quick look back at the weekend. And we're not going to do a play-by-play, but there are a few innings that I want to highlight, really in each game. Kind of the turning point in each game. Now, we knew that Rice's Friday night starter was probably really all they had from a starting standpoint. And, of course, we get that guy first, right? I mean, if you have them on day three, it's a probably different, it's a different scenario, right? But, yeah, we knew, and I had several people that reached out, and thank you so much for doing so. That said, hey, Steve, your scouting report was correct. The starter was legit, but they didn't have much bullpen. Well, part of that, too, is, you know, when you – Friday, you're managing the whole weekend, right? And when the game is lost, the game is lost, and it doesn't matter who you throw. You're just trying to get the game over. And so they trotted out some inexperienced arms to kind of get some work, and we certainly victimized them in the seventh. Pico was outstanding again. And of the weekend starters, I think he is the only one right now that people have a supreme level of confidence in, because you know he's going to go out there and give you a winning effort every single time. You may not win, but he's going to go out there and give you, you know, his best effort. 2-0 now is young Pico Cohn on the year. Davian Hickson drops to 0-1. He had been their best starter so far. And it took a little while, but Stay got to him. We knew that ride fastball was going to be a bit of an issue for him. And we saw a lot of cutters this weekend, but not really for him. Hickson goes 4 2/3 of an inning, 4 hits, 4 runs, all of them earned. 6 Ks, 3 walks, and 2 hit-by-pitches. Went through 97 pitches, which is the longest of the year. Pico also threw in the 90s, 93 pitches for him. 6 1/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, couple of earned runs, 2 walks. 6 strikeouts. And how ironic is it that the very first walk of the year ends up coming in front of a 2-run jack? It was interesting. It was. But, you know, it wouldn't last forever. But Pico's a dude. Gave us a great effort. Chase Hungate comes in, pitches 2/3 of an inning. He actually gets a save in this ball game because of how much we blew it open late. Yeah, it was a save opportunity when he came in. But that seventh was something you don't see very often. 8 hitters go to the plate. All 8 score. Ace Reese, of course, emerging this weekend. And really, you're really beginning to see the player that we saw in the fall and the spring. You know, he got a couple of hits early on, and people were like, okay, great. And then he didn't get a hit for like a week. He's been on fire ever since then. And really kind of a coming-out party for him over the weekend. And I think that's something, you know, we need stars, right? And you're getting to see Ace Reese really begin to kind of pop for the Mississippi State lineup. And, you know, he had a big weekend. You know, he certainly did. And those are the things you kind of work through and you begin to kind of think about is moving forward. You know, who in this lineup are we going to be able to count on? Who can we trust? And Ace Reese is kind of showing you that, yeah, I can be that guy. Yeah, after his first 2 hits against Manhattan, he didn't have a hit for 4 games. And then since then, you know, he had 2 against Missouri State in Game 2, 1 Game 3, then 2 against Troy, 2 against Rice, 3 against Arizona, and then 1 yesterday against Oklahoma State. But, yeah, you're starting to see what Ace can be and what he means to this lineup. Also, play a pretty good defense, too. But hitting 317 now. 317, let's see here, where are we? 5 jacks on the year already. We talked about him being a potential 20 home run guy. He's got 6 walks and 5 jacks on a year. Strikeout numbers probably could be a little bit better, but that's kind of part of competing, right? Especially when you're a big swinger like he is. But, yeah. So, you know, we walk it off with that one. And then, you know, the game that I was most worried about, and I think I shared this on the show. I know I told the wife. I love you guys not as much as I love her, but sometimes I forget what I tell her and what I tell you. And so if I hadn't told you today, I love you. But I know I've told her that. But the Arizona game worried me a little bit. You know, because that's a team, again, that, you know, won the Pac-12 last year when there was still a Pac-12. They win the Pac-12 tournament. You know, there's a winning culture. Yes, they've lost a lot, and they had the difficult weekend. But then they, you know, put together a nice little winning streak. They feel pretty good about life. You know, win 7 games in a row. They ultimately lose to Tennessee yesterday. But I want to spend a little time talking about this one, a little more than we did with Rice. But you know, Carson Ligon, okay? I'm not going to badmouth any of our kids, but we have to do something a little bit different. And, you know, we have kind of like flirted with disaster, and then disaster kind of strikes in this ball game. I think that's an important thing for us to kind of understand. I mean, you jump out right out of the gate, right? You get a ground out, feel pretty good about that. Then it's a hit by pitch and a wild pitch. It goes second. Then it's a 2-run jack. It's a 2-0 ball game before anybody is comfortable. And I saw it on social media. People are like, here we go. Here we go. You get in the top of second. And again, these are the things. Number one, when you are maybe you've got a high velo fastball, maybe it doesn't have a ton of movement on it. And you've got to be able to pair that up with the off-speed and the slider, and you struggle with your complementary pitches, people sit fastball. In addition to that, you can't give out free passes. So we have the hit-by-pitch in the first, and then we get, you know, fly out to left to open the second, and then we walk a guy. And then it's a single. And then it's a fielding error, and we didn't get anything there. And that's Garrett Fried, a guy that's not comfortable being a middle infielder. And we're trying to make the most of it, but it cost us here. And then we compound that with another hit by pitch that forces a run in. And then it's a single through the left side. It's a 5-1 ball game, and people are like, you know what, this thing is over. It's done. But give the Bulldog bullpen a lot of credit, because when you get down early, you just need a hold to give you a chance to kind of start chipping away. And that's really what you want. We can't allow them to score anymore. And maybe give us a chance. Well, in the bottom of the fourth, we do. Ace Reese hits his first home run of the day, and it was an absolute tank job to right. Makes it a 5-2 ball game. And then, you know, McPherson is just kind of rolling through here. I mean, just kind of knocking him down. We get to the fifth. Down 3. Aaron Downs, who's really kind of beginning to play into his zone, hits a double to center. Stevenson hits a hard shot to short. They can't field it. Now, all of a sudden, you got runners on the corners and nobody out. Highfield grounds out to third, but the run scores. So now, all of a sudden, you look up here, headed to the sixth, and you're just down 2. McPherson finally surrenders a run here, gives up back-to-back base hits, and he was done. And you bring in Dane Burns after you give up the 6th run, and Burns was absolutely filthy. Burns is a true freshman. And guys, he has senior-level hitters missing that slider by a foot or more. It is some filthy, filthy stuff. We need to pitch more. It's true. But now you're down 6-3, so it feels like, man, we've just been scratching and clawing and everything else. And then the kid comes out there and gives us, you know, 3 good innings, and they finally get to him. We make a change, bring in Burns. He kind of shuts him down. Well, in the 6th, you come right back out there. Chance doubles down the right field line, and then Reese nearly hits another jack, right? It goes off the wall there, misses a home run by a foot, but the run scores. So, again, it's going to the bottom third, the bottom 3 innings, you're down 2. And then Burns, you know, gets up a single here, but strikes out the side. All right, bottom of 7, and this is a very interesting inning for us offensively. Knowing Stevens strikes out swinging, lengthy at bat, gets down in a count 1-2, works it full, and goes down swinging. And then Highfield singles to right field. and then still second. So now all of a sudden it's like, hey, we got a runner in scoring position. We got to cash in. And then Cup grounds to second, moves the runner to third. Now we need a two-out base hit. And then Garrett Fry steps up, singles to right center to put the run home, and then still second. And then Chance strikes out swinging. But now you're down one going to the final six, any final six outs. Mekhi Grant comes out and hits a guy. It's the last thing you want, right? He hits him, but then he strikes out the side. Bottom eight. Put yourself in a situation here, right? Give them some credit. They bring in Alberti. I can't remember. He gets Reese to strike out swinging. I know at the way he was swinging it that day, all of you were like me. Let's just let Ace hit, you know, and we'll be good, you know. And he's not Superman, as I'm texting the wife back. So he goes down swinging, and then Sullivan goes down swinging. Sullivan gets ahead in this count 2-1, and then can't put the ball in play. And then Reed Stallman, who was a big story on Sunday, is hit by the pitch. We pinch run for him, and then Aaron Downs pops up to second. So we get the runner on with two outs. Can't move him around. You need this ninth inning to go well. We bring in Nate Williams, who has been outstanding. And again, I told you guys when I saw him in the spring, I'm thinking this is a guy that's going to be able to help us. I was expecting nothing from Nate Williams. And he comes out there and he strikes out the first two hitters. And that's, you know, that's Walton and White. And then he gets Caulfield. That's 2-3-4 to end the top of nine. So here we go again in the bottom of the ninth. Nolan Stevens comes up and you're thinking, does this get us a runner on? What does he do? Rifles one in the right field. And all of a sudden the tie runs on base. Bring in Michael O'Brien. Highfield gets down a great bunt. Well, now all of a sudden you got runners at first and second. And you start thinking, hey, we've got the tying and winning run on base, nobody out. We'd make the baseball play. Dylan Cup lays down a near-perfect bunt himself. And now all of a sudden, the tying runs at third. The winning runs at second. A single to right center is going to win the game for you. A sac fly to right is going to tie the game for you. We need to just put a ball in play. And then this is one of those things that, you know, again, a lot of people – And we may have differing philosophies here, okay? But in college baseball, and really high school baseball, and really all competitive baseball, you teach and preach downward angle, right? So you got Michael O'Brien at third. He's going to read that ball off the bat. If it's a ground ball, he's going to go. That's not a Mississippi State tenet. That's a baseball tenet, right? That's just what you do. And people, well, you got to see it through. What? In this situation, if there's going to be a play, right, if it's a ground ball to second base, you better be 60 feet down the line before he makes it throw to first. Because if you wait till he fields it, you're dead to rights. So you got to make him make a play. And what do you know? That's what happens. Yeah, and we get the full count there. It's like Fry had a good at bat. And we end up getting, you know, the one thing that I would say about this is we probably should stay in the rundown longer to give everybody a chance to advance and let them replace you. That's the one criticism I would offer.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
It wasn't the wrong play. It just didn't work out. And then Bryce Chance flies out to left. And that's your ball game. And so, again, there's so many things. People say, well, it came down to this. Guys, there's so many opportunities in this ball game. If Carson Ligon is better, we win the ball game. You know, if you got a couple guys atop that order that get a meaningful hit, you win the ball game. But we put ourselves in a winning scenario in the ninth, and we didn't get it. It's not a video game. Guys have to make plays. But, you know, outside of the decision, you know, people are like, oh, we should have started Ligon. Well, the gift of hindsight is wonderful, right? But I don't know that that can continue. We got to get a quality start. I mean, and this weekend, you got to get all that settled because you're going to SEC play the week after against Texas. And so that's an opportunity for us to kind of validate ourselves. I mean, if we played a game Tuesday night, I mean, beating Southern Miss, we need to win that game, right? We got to get 4-0 this week. But you're not going to learn much about your team against Queens. So you got to take this weekend to kind of settle a rotation and kind of define some pitching roles because, you know, what we did yet this weekend outside of Pico as a starter, we did not get two quality starts. That's the reality of it. And I love all these kids. I do. But I'm not going to sit here and carry water for them, right? You got to play. You got to perform. This is Mississippi State. There's expectations here. Our fans expect to win every game. Now, we know that's not realistic, but we never go into a game thinking, you know, it's okay if we lose this one. No. And here's a similar situation, right? So, again, we start out, we get Bryce Chance rips that ball over the wall and left. And so I'm thinking, okay, we're good. We're good here. You know, hey, you give Stone a little margin to work with. But you get a one-out shot over the fence and left. And it's like, hey, you can pitch a little more aggressively when you have the lead. And even with that home run, we still left ducks on the pond. With two outs, we start a bit of a rally. You know, Sullivan singles and Stallman singles. And Nolan Stevens comes up and goes down swinging. You know, base hit there. It's probably a different conversation today. Oklahoma State, in the first, they tie it, and it's kind of interesting. You know, we get the first out. It was a single back up the middle, nothing really special about it. Other than the fact it went up the middle, it's not like it went back with some pace. It was just kind of a well-placed ball back up the middle. And then Schubert singles, and there's runners on the corners. And so you get the fly out to center field, and it advances the runner. And that's your approach. We have so many people that use the term approach incorrectly. Your approach varies from at-bat to at-bat. And so if you come up in this scenario with less than two outs and you got a runner at third, you're looking for something to elevate. You want the RBI sack fly to get the run home. You're not. It's not a C ball, hit ball mentality. You go up there with that, you're going to roll one over to short, hit into an ending double play. So you're looking for something to elevate. You're going up there with that in mind. I need to find a ball that I can get into the outfield, good, bad, or indifferent, whether they catch it or not, is really inconsequential to me. My approach is to go up there and see if I can't hit a fly ball. That's what he does. That is good situational hitting. And, of course, we got other people to vote, you know, our approach. You know, come on. Get over yourself. So then we get Brugman to ground out to the pitcher. Nice play by Stone. It's a 1-1 ball game. And then we go 1-2-3 in the second. And we kind of flirted with some disaster here in the second. And this is the one criticism of Stone that I'm going to offer. We're not throwing enough strikes. And even though we had won the first two games, and listen, I understand the story. Absolutely understand the story. I love Stone Simmons. I love that family. But we got to throw strikes. And so we come out here in the bottom of second, and we get a ground out, and then we get a strikeout. You're thinking, okay, we're back. We're good. And then when we walk a guy. And then he goes second on the pass ball, and Ross has got to do a better job of that too. And so Stone gets us out of it. You know, strikeout swinging, and thought he had the slider working pretty well. We go 1-2-3 and a third, and we're right back out there. And this is the disaster inning, right? This is the inning that determined the ball game in many respects. In the third. And we come out and we walk the first two guys. Leadoff walks are of the devil. And then we compound it with another one. And we were behind in both of these counts. It's not like we got ahead 0-2 and started nibbling. You know, we go 3-0 on Bray Smith. And then the get me over strike is there, right? And then we walk him. Shule, who is a really good player, we get behind in a count 3-1. And so if you're going to be in hitters' counts, you're going to be a little more selective about what you can and can't throw because of the fact that you've got to either get a swing and miss or you got to throw a strike to keep things rolling. We bounce back a little bit here, and we get Schubert to strike out swinging. And there's a ground ball. Could have been a double play. I think maybe that's asking a bit much. And there was a lot of discussion in the press box. Should that have, that slide have, you know, ensured the double play? I thought he was legal. That's my feeling. The umpires did too, obviously, and their vote counts more than mine or yours. But again, Stone right here gets the ground ball. That maybe should have got him out of the inning. And again, that's you can never assume the double play. But I'm not going to be real critical here, right? Not happy about the walks, happy about the punch out, and then rolling up the ground ball. We got to make a play there, but I think it was going to be difficult. And then we give up a single to right center. Run scores. Okay, let's get out of here, right? And then we have this crazy play where I don't know if Ace just didn't read it right, but you know, it looks like it's going to be a really big play. And he basically makes the stop as he's falling down. There's no play to be made. Run scores, 3-1. Again, you think, we're done. We can get out of this. And then we get a ground ball to Garrick Fry. Just need to step on it, grab the ball, step on the bag. Inning's over. We're down 2 runs. We don't. And then the throw to first is nearly wild. Hunter Hines does a good job of getting over there to it. But the inning continues. And then there's a pass ball. A run scores. And I didn't think Stone got off the mound quick enough either. Now, Ross got to do his job, right? And then Thompson doubles to left, 2-run score. And again, how many times did we have a chance to get off the field in this inning? And so, yeah, that's one of the reasons that I don't feel the same way about Stone that maybe I do about Ligon. I think the fastball is too flat. But even though Stone put himself in a bad situation, and you can't do that, he made pitches. And we didn't make plays behind him. I mean, again, you go back and think about this. 2 walks, strikeout swinging, ground ball, single to right, ground ball, ground ball. You know what I'm saying? It's true. But now it's a 6-1 ball game. You know, we come back and we get the Stallman home run to right, and not a big fan of the bat flip there. You know, you heard me talk about Tennessee. When you're down 4 runs, yeah, we're not going to bat flip. Okay, and I understand it's an upper deck shot. I get it. You may get caught up in the moment. He got an official warning. They didn't eject him. There were some people on the road that thought he should have been. And one of the questions that I thought to myself is, you were just admiring the home run. You couldn't have watched him bat flip and watched the ball sail. Couldn't be done, right? But the reality of it is he did bat flip, and you know, I get it. An upper deck tank is something to be remembered for, but it's just kind of silly for the bat flip. It just, especially when it's on their side. He didn't throw it at their dugout, but you're as a left-hander in that scenario, you're on that side. It'd be one thing if you flip on your side, but they're going to have a discussion. But 6-2, and we play pretty well here in the fourth. You know, we're able to kind of, you know, you got Ben Davis, and Ben Davis has been outstanding for Mississippi State. He really has been. He's been really, really good for us, and he's the one that gets you out of that third inning. Comes back in the fourth and gets you 1-2-3. You know, we don't do much in the fifth, and neither do they. You know, they do get a one-out single And then we get a strikeout lucky. And so two hit, then they get Daughter gets a single. So they get two singles in the inning off Davis, which hadn't always been, you know, one of those deals. And this inning too, Joe Powell comes in. And that was helpful. Top of six. Again, you start thinking about, you know, what are our opportunities? Yeah, because everybody focuses on what happens in the ninth. They bring in this line kid, and Ace Reese singles to right. And then Sullivan walks. Great at bat. Actually ends up going, what, 8-9 pitches? And Stallman strikes out looking. I thought the call was a little bit shaky, but it's too close to take in that scenario, especially with the way he was swinging the bat. But you get two men on and ultimately get nothing out of it. Because Stallman strikes out looking, downs, you know, pinch hits, and then there's a wild pitch to get runners to second and third, and this is, again, a great opportunity here, like we just talked about. You know, single in the right or left center is going to score two runs. Routine fly ball to left is going to score at least one. And we kind of get unlucky here. Downs hits it on the screws, and the third baseman has to make a dive and catch, and it saved two runs. The tip of the cap to them. It's not like Downs went up there and looked at strike three, and then Hines, who was back in lineup after a couple days off, flies out to center field. But those are two guys that have been in our program for a while, and again, I'm not going to be critical of Downs because, again, he did hit it on the screws. It's not like he went up there and just popped up. But that's a missed opportunity. Huge. Because you never know what's going to happen after that, but if you get the big hit there, it's a two-run game. And then lo and behold, you know, what happens, right? We open up with the leadoff walk. So we pull Davis, bring in Fortenberry. There's a single here, and these are the little things that get you, right? We didn't come first. You know, Sawyer Reed's got to get over there. Simple as that. The pitcher and the first baseman are pursuing the bunt to the right side. The second baseman has to get over. He does not. And so as a result, it's a single. Well, they sacrifice, you know, both those guys over. I mean, they're just trying to get a bunt down, right? And then we gift them a base runner. Well, then they sack bunt those guys around. Okay, so now they're in the same scenario we were in. And what do you know? Schubart homers. Now it's a 9-2 ball game, and it felt like this thing was over. We bring in Kevin Minnell, who I thought was really good. I think you guys did too. He gets a comebacker, and then we get a strikeout looking to get out of it. But it's 9-2. I give the team credit for not giving up. Certainly, great job in that respect. But we, again, and we're going to talk about this here shortly, but you know, we couldn't get the big hit late. So one out walk the cup, and then Reeves gets a single in, and so you got runners on, and then, you know, Chance hits the ball pretty well, and third baseman can't make a play. Base is loaded here. Reese flies out, RBI sack fly. Sullivan then singles, drives in a run, and then Stallman hits an absolute murder job to right. So State with five runs in the inning, and you're back in it. You're down two, and a good job here. You know, a good job pitching here in the seventh. We get the hit by pitch, but then we get the 6-4-3. And then a ground out. So Minnell, in that 0-2, 0-2 to Miola, and then you hit him, and the pitch just gets away from him. But you can't do that, you know, especially when you're trying to win a job. All right, top eight, State, you know, nothing going on here. You know, 1-2-3. Bottom of eight, Minnell back out there. Excuse me, Dotson comes in and does a good job. Kind of holds everybody at bay. Gets 1-2-3 innings. The top of nine here. You strike out swinging with Reeves, and then Chance comes and singles through the left side. So now you bring the tying run to the plate. Reese flies out to left, and then Sullivan flies out to center. And so the thing that's – there's a few common denominators in all of this. You go back and you look at the loss to Troy on Tuesday. You look at the loss to Arizona on Saturday, and you look at the loss to Oklahoma State on Sunday. We had the tying run and or the winning run on base in the ninth inning in all three of those games. All three of them. And this is one of the things that I get back to. Somebody's got to step up and make a big play. I mean, your bullpen's pitching their hearts out, and some of those guys need to be in a rotation. But your bullpen's doing a great job. Of course, you got to backfill, right? Got to stretch some guys out. And maybe Hungate needs to, you know, get more middle relief innings. I don't know. But it's kind of like running that, if you've ever done it, you know, like you run the half marathon, you know. And you, when you do your training plan, like you may run 10 miles as your long run. And then all of a sudden, when you're running along, they're thinking, I've never run more than 10 miles. So I got to run 3 more miles. I got to run a 5K in addition to running my PR. And then once you get to like mile marker 11, you think, hey, I'm doing it. That's kind of where we are with this ninth inning stuff. You know, how many times did you see it with T.A., especially in 2021? He struggled at times early in his career, too. He led us in strikeouts as a freshman. People forget that. But T.A. wasn't always T.A. He had the potential to be T.A. But sometimes once you have that first big one, you know, when you answer in the moment, it kind of breaks the ceiling. And that's what's got to happen for Mississippi State. We have got to find a way to have some heroics in the ninth inning. Now, the best way to avoid that is to pitch it a little bit better at times, too, and to have some timely hitting. But situationally, we put ourselves in an opportunity to win every game that we lost this week. You guys have to step up and make plays. You know, again, you go back and look at, you know, the game against Arizona. You know, Nolan Stevens goes out there, gives you the opportunity, right? He gets a guy on base. So now everybody behind him has the opportunity to hit against a pitcher in a stretch. Bryce Chance with one out comes in. What does he do? You know, he brings a tying run to the plate. It's what you got to do, you know. But we need somebody to step up and have that big dramatic hit. And, you know, Noah Sullivan didn't do it on Tuesday. He made some big hits for us over the weekend. But, you know, and this is not about Noah Sullivan, you know. It's just really kind of about us as a whole. And you can't be critical of Ace Reese the weekend that he had. But when you had Bryce Chance on and then Ace and Noah coming out back-to-back, you think, okay, somebody will get a hit, we'll have a chance to score. Well, we don't. And so that's not Mississippi State baseball. And that's one of the things that I want to share is before we change topics is, you know, we have been that team historically that always expects to win it in the ninth. Like, if we're not ahead, we're just like, you know, this is what we do. You know, you got to fight us for all 27 outs. His last three are going to be the most difficult to get. We've got to get back to that mentality. And, you know, some of those guys have done it. You know, it's like, hey, you know, we'll extend the inning and give our guys a chance to swing. And of course, I'd love to just go mercy rule everybody. That's not going to happen. But somebody has got to break through here and prove that it can be done, right? Because that's one of those things, that's a mental toughness thing for me, right? And Tuesday, Saturday, Sunday, you manage the situation, you get behind because of some poor pitching, right? And at times some poor defense. And then your offense kind of claws its way back in, thanks in large part to your bullpen, you know, getting holds and slowing things down and kind of keeping the game where it is. And then you've got to go out there and deliver. And that's the thing, to me, that's a bigger issue. I can find another pitcher. But when you got multiple guys coming up in those scenarios and not coming through, that's pitching. Excuse me, that's players. And that's where the toughness issue comes in. And, you know, I talk to people all around the country when I travel. They talk about how tough we are. And when we do that in the ninth, you know, you're letting somebody out tough you. I don't think they're tougher than us. Maybe some of our players do. But I don't believe that. But we need somebody to break through and get a big hit and put a game away. You know, number one, I don't want to have to walk stuff off. But the reality of it is that we got a lot going on. And we got a lot of things to improve. And Chris Simona said it yesterday, and I noticed some people were critical of that. He always says that we have a lot to improve upon. Every team does. But this last week, we have not played up to our capabilities. It's true, right? And, you know, we're trying to find the right offensive lineup. And I think Chris deserves some credit for that. I mean, he sits in Hunter Hines for two games. Kind of give him a chance to kind of see it a little bit. You know, Aaron Downs is playing well. Reed Stallman's playing well. You know, you put Garrick Fry in there, you know, have him leading off, trying to find a way to make that going. But, you know, he's hurting us defensively. And so, yeah, there's a lot. And people say, well, that's what the preseason is for. I don't think you know anything about it. I think that sounds good to you. But you don't know what you have until you play another team. It's one thing to play against each other. Yeah, because we're always ranking the pack. And so that's kind of what happens. When you see the same pitchers week after week after week, you kind of learn what they like to throw and what counts, what their pitches look like, what the shape of it is. And then you go play another team. That's when you can truly evaluate who and what you have. And you put a club together and you put them out there. And listen, I still think this team is capable of some very big things. I know some of you are like, oh, I don't know, I'm ready to give up. Well, go ahead. We'll welcome you back. The pieces are there. And I think probably the two biggest issues, and I think we all would agree, it's not some hot take. We got to settle the rotation. But we got to have some guys step up and just be stubborn at the plate. And stubborn in the right way. This guy's going to say, you know what, you're not going to beat me. I'm going to find a way to win this ball game. I don't care who you trot out there. I'm going to find a way to win this game. Because that's what TA did. You know, we've had so many players over the years that have done that. You know, Dakota Jordan did it a little bit for us last couple years. But you have to have guys that embrace the moment. It's a big part of it. Adding a new feature to the show beginning today, our player of the week. Probably do it, it's kind of varying. But it's going to be brought to you by CloseWithBlair.com, our friend in the mortgage industry. 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. If you are looking to refinance a home, buy a home, maybe get a second mortgage, Blair's the way to go. 24 years of experience. Get his know-how working for you. He can give you the chance to get to the closing table when many others cannot, because he knows how to construct loans that make sense. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look to Blair Chandler. He is a bulldog through and through. And I got two that, you know, rides the wave of emotion of Mississippi State Athletics just like you do. I like to keep money in the family whenever we can because I know it's going to end up in season tickets or NIL donations or Mississippi State merchandising sales. I think all that stuff's important. It runs deep with me. So hit up Blair Chandler at CloseWithBlair.com. Okay, our player of the weekend, I think, has to be Ace Reese. I think you all would likely agree with that. Ace, even though it was a losing weekend for us, put together a winning performance. Ace Reese now hitting .317, 11 games, 11 starts, 41 ABs, 9 runs scored, 13 hits, which is second most on the team, has a couple doubles, a triple, 5 home runs, which leads the team, and 14 RBI, which also lead the team. He also has 6 walks and 12 strikeouts, got to get better there. But, yeah, heck of a weekend for Ace. And I think when you begin to, again, you see more of him, you kind of see why I was so excited about him from the get-go. And really interesting, too, I wanted to point out, because I've seen a few things out there, because people react emotionally sometimes without looking at facts. They say, oh, our portal haul was terrible. Well, that's not what the numbers show. Currently leading the team with a .375 batting average is Reed Stallman. Now, granted, he's played in just 9 games. He's missed a couple. But, 24 at-bats, 9 hits, couple doubles, 4 tanks, 10 ribbies. And, again, leading the team with a .375 average. Noah Sullivan is second on the team with a .343 average. Got the 1 tank, 12 ribbies, and has shown a little bit clutch at times. Need to see a little bit more out of him. And then there's Ace Reese, who is now 5th on the team. So 3 of your top 5 players offensively are all transfer guys. Yeah, maybe you didn't know that. So there you go. Now, our new sponsor for the top 10 list. Had a chance to visit with him recently. I was hoping to get down there, but it's such a grind going down to these ball games. But our new sponsor is Kalito Guitars, a Mississippi State-owned company. Yeah, down in Lake Jackson, Texas, they sell electric, acoustic, and classical guitars. They're known for their high-quality instruments, their exemplary customer service, and just their expert advice. Sometimes it's difficult to know what instrument is best for you or your favorite player. They can help you with that. Kalito Guitars desires to help you find the best guitar for you or your player's needs. High-quality instruments, premium soundwoods, including spruce, cypress, mahogany, and rosewood. A superb fit and finish. Excellent setup for easy playing. Actually, incredible company. Kalito Guitars does a complete setup and inspection of every guitar in their shop before they ever ship it. You don't have to worry with any of that stuff. You know, who they sell from? Yamaha, Guild Guitars, Cordoba Guitars, Cremera, many, many more. Francisco Navarro, so many more. Visit Kalito Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O. Just like it sounds, KalitoGuitars.com. Or for more information, call 979-297-4733. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep it simple for you. We got a promo code for you for this too. 10% discount. Yeah, for Boneyard listeners. Promo code is BSR. You know what? That includes free shipping and no sales tax unless you're in the state of Texas. And you know what else? To kind of sweeten the deal a little bit, I'm going to make a 5% donation to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund. Yeah, so you buy a guitar from a Bulldog, get a quality instrument, and you're helping Mississippi State at the same time. We're keeping business in the family, making it as easy for you as we can. Again, that's KalitoGuitars.com, promo code BSR. All right, time for today's top 10 list. And a guitarist that had a good run, man. And the reason he comes up today is this is the 13th anniversary of his passing. And it's rough, man. I mean, it is. Ronnie Montrose was a guy that suffered with cancer and ultimately made the difficult decision to end his own life. And it's a rough deal all the way around. But when Led Zeppelin was kind of becoming a thing around the world, Montrose was kind of America's response to Led Zeppelin, and didn't work out, right? Led Zeppelin, the greatest rock band of all time, in my estimation. But Ronnie introduced us to Sammy Hagar, too, a native of San Francisco, California, a guy that played with a lot of different people. In addition to his own work with Montrose and Gamma, you know, he had a lot of stuff. Had some, you know, Ronnie Montrose had some solo albums. We're going to deal with the band Montrose today, but he worked with, you know, Herbie Hancock and Van Morrison. Was on the Tupelo Honey album with Van Morrison. Gary Wright's Dreamweaver album, Power of Love. Yeah. Some names you know. The Neville Brothers. It's all good stuff. Edgar Winter Group. Glenn Hughes. I mean, there's so much stuff, man. Sammy Hagar. This guy is kind of the Steve Lukather, maybe of the 70s, you know, before, for you guitarists out there. He did session work with a lot of people. Nobody does it on the scale of Lukather. But nevertheless, your top 10 Montrose songs today, your top 10 list is sponsored by KalitoGuitars.com. All right, we're going to go off the Jump On It album. Number 10 is going to be Music Man. Great way to start. Number 9, this is an interesting song. It's got a kind of a unique vibe to it. It's got the piano to it. The beat itself is kind of infectious. It's really unlike anything else in the catalog. But Clown Woman, number 9. Don't Take Offense. Number 8, off the second album from Montrose, it's a title track. It comes in with some interesting percussion. It's the track Paper Money. Think you'll like that one too. Number 7, back to the Jump On It album. We're going to stick with the title track. Think you'll like that one too. Number 6, off the Jump On It album. This is one of those tracks too. I love the guitar tone. I love the kind of the racing connotation to it. It's Let's Go. That's not like the Cars' Let's Go. Different track. Number 5, from the self-titled album, the debut album from 1973, Montrose, it's Rock the Nation. And you'll hear a familiar voice on that album with Sammy Hagar, was the lead singer and one of the primary songwriters of this album. Now, number four, from the Warner Brothers Presents album, wanted to get all four of these things represented here. It's All I Need, which is the only ballad that makes our list. And it's interesting, too. Like, there's so much that Montrose did. Like, many of you had the Black Crowes' Amorica album. You know that? It had some controversy with the cover. Well, Montrose did it first with the Jump On It cover. And you look at it at first glance, and you think you see something that's not really there. And then you look a little closer, and you see, oh, well, that's still kind of, I don't know, inappropriate in the eyes of some. But, so they switched over to Warner Brothers, and things kind of changed a little bit. But one of the songs, too, that I think we'll get to a little bit later, the intro to this song sounds a lot like a Motley song. All right, number three, it's I Got the Fire. I think you'll dig that one a lot. Now, the top two songs are probably songs you know, and maybe you don't know that you know them, or maybe you thought they were Sammy Hagar solo tracks. They weren't. And number two, the intro to this song, Bad Motor Scooter, sounds an awful lot like Kickstart My Heart, which really is Kickstart My Heart kind of ripping off Bad Motor Scooter. Now, this was a comparison that was made, you know, in the late 80s. Some people kind of brought this up, and Nikki Sixx himself kind of admitted that he was a big fan of Ronnie Montrose. But number one, and if you've seen the Sammy Hagar interviews and things like that, I think Tommy Lee actually played the drums on this. They had a live performance at Sammy's house of Rock Candy going all the way back to 1973, and this song absolutely jams. And so if you're a classic rock fan, and maybe you don't know a lot about Montrose, you should. This is the one that you absolutely add to your playlist. It's Rock Candy from Montrose. And so again, we wanted to honor the great contributions of the late, great Ronnie Montrose on our show today and thank our friends at Kalito Guitars. Sammy Hagar is a guy that's kind of kept this alive a little bit. You know, he'll go out and perform some of those songs on his solo tours that he wrote with Montrose. And I think it's worth your time and effort to kind of check out. I think sometimes, too, Sammy Hagar, people don't realize what a great performer he has been, you know, for goodness, man. You know, 50 years now? More than 50 years? You know, you had all the angst about the David Lee Roth exodus from Van Halen, and so Sammy kind of got, you know, unfairly maligned by some people, I think. Steve, I don't like Van Hagar. That's fine. You don't have to. I dig it, man. I love it. I love the David Lee Roth era. I love the Sammy Hagar era, and I think some people are always looking for something to gripe about anyway. But, man, you know, you look about, you know, Sammy with Montrose, and then Sammy, of course, you know, the great solo career. And so it made a lot of sense. You know, when they began to add a new singer, that Sammy was in the mix with Van Halen. And so now you can kind of go back to kind of the beginning of this whole thing with Sammy. It was the career debut of Sammy Hagar. I mean, you know him from I Can't Drive 55 and being the guy that replaced David Lee Roth, but affectionately known as the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar makes his major debut with Montrose. And again, I think there's going to be some familiarity with all this stuff. But it's so interesting, too, that at the time, that album really didn't do well, but it's aged really well. And I think as Sammy Hagar kind of walked into the spotlight, the back catalog began to kind of sell, and people were like, hey, this is kind of cool. So be sure and check it out. Again, 1973, that's your first release of Montrose. It's been, you know, kind of tinkered with a little bit over the years as they've digitized the format, but you're gonna know it right out of the gate. You're going to hear that Sammy Hagar voice, and I think that's a good thing, too. It's so interesting that Ronnie introduced Sammy to us, and I think kind of the other way around. I think Sammy has reintroduced, or maybe introduced for the first time, Ronnie Montrose to many other people because he just had such more national appeal. Yeah, so there we go. That's your top 10 list for today. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. It's the best place to go buy Mississippi State merch. Be sure and hit them up. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. You'll be glad you did. Yeah, you know it. You know you'll be glad you did. I get a complimentary hug when I make a purchase. Maybe that's just me. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm the one initiating. We'll see, you know. But if you can't make it to town to get that free hug, be sure and hit them up at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. Gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And please allow me to make my pitch again. Graduation's coming up in a few weeks. Be the preferred aunt, uncle, grandparent by getting that official Mississippi State diploma frame from Campus Bookmart. You'll be glad you did. The sun's coming out too. You need to go. You bought all those hoodies, right? You need a couple new shirts. And Dad always needs a new shirt. You know it's true. Dad always needs a new shirt. Mom, son, daughter, what other connections you may have, get Dad a new shirt. Because you and I both know, left up to Dad, he'd still be wearing those pocketed polos from 20 years ago. You know it's true. Dad always needs a little help upgrading the wardrobe. And so you can do that for Dad. You don't have to wait till Father's Day. Do it today. Again, that's campusbookmart.net. Okay. Mississippi State men's basketball no longer in the top 25, nor is baseball. And here's the thing, too. Especially on this basketball side, we're getting ready to go play. Right? We're getting ready to go into the postseason. And so I'm not even worried about that. It's an opinion poll at its core anyway. And it's so late in the year. You know, we're there. And we play a tournament for a reason. It's not like the media picks a national champion anymore. I'm not even worried about it in baseball either because we got plenty of games to play. But real quickly, we'll take a quick look back at Mississippi State's 12-point win over LSU. And it took a little while. You know, I mean, we're down two at the break. And in the second half, again, kind of returning to form for Mississippi State. You know, Chris Jans is one of those coaches that we have really kind of prided ourselves on the fact that he makes really good halftime adjustments. It's a rarity that we get absolutely slugged in the second half. There have been some times we have, as you guys are well aware. I mean, nobody's perfect. But this is kind of, you know, quintessential Chris Jans. It's like, hey, it's a tight ball game, and we're just going to kind of lock you up here in the second half and wish you well on your way home. LSU now 14-15, 3-13 in the SEC. Bulldogs now 20-9, 8-8. We talked about how important it was to get to the 20-win plateau and have a chance to finish 500. We're right there, so we need to at least get a split this week with 21 wins. 9-9 in the SEC, I think you can feel really good about, you know, this team's prospects. But, you know, on any given day, anything could happen. But it's so interesting, too. And I go back to this, too. I mean, of course, there were some people reporting that, you know, we were about to hire a McMahon. We were no longer talking to him. But not all sources are created the same. But, Chris Jans has had the better of it. Now, granted, I think Chris Jans inherited a better situation than McMahon did at LSU. But it is not going well in these matchups for LSU. You know, I remember last year, you know, Hubbard just absolutely destroyed them in the PMAC. And Josh, a good job here. You know, later, it just really felt like, you know, I'm covering baseball, kind of keeping up with it on socials in between innings. But I was a little bit concerned at the half, but I thought to myself, you know what? LSU's not very good, and Chris Jans is. And I think we're going to have an opportunity to do some good things. And, of course, you know, really the last 10 minutes of that game, State really began to kind of push this thing away. And you look up here, I guess we're at the 12-minute mark. We're just up two. I'm looking through the notes right here. And you get to 62-55. Right at the 10-minute mark. Sean Jones knocks down a couple free throws. And from there, State never really looked back. That's how it should be, you know. And you win the games that you're supposed to win. And so this week, on Tuesday, tomorrow, Texas comes in. 7 p.m. tip. This is a game State needs to win. We'd love to win them both this week, but this last home game, need to knock these guys out. I think we're certainly capable of doing that, too. We got to get back in the tournament, right? I mean, that's not the only goal, but it is a goal. And I think that's an important aspect of this, you know, protecting your home court. And the State's been really good on the road this year. But this is a Texas team that has not been very good. They're 16-13 overall. They've lost three games in a row, 5-11 in the SEC, 3-6 in true road games, 2-1 on a neutral court, and 11-6 at home. And, of course, the bulk of those home games are non-conference games. So they've not been a good road team. They haven't been good in the SEC. But as we know from experience, you can't take anything for granted in this league, and you feel good about playing this one at home. Because remember, we thought we should just go there and be able to beat Oklahoma. We knew that they were a team that had been really good at times this year, but we felt like we should be good enough to go win. I'm glad this one is here. But let's just kind of look at SEC play for them, because the non-conference is really not quite as important, I guess. I guess to be fair about that, maybe we should look at – they did kind of beef up their non-conference and took on some teams that maybe had a little notoriety at the time. They open up in Las Vegas and lose to Ohio State. And then you run through Houston Christian and Chicago State, Mississippi Valley. And then they get a win in Brooklyn, New York against Syracuse. Now, granted, this isn't the Syracuse of old, but to be able to go up there and play in the Barclays Center and win a game, I'm sure that was a good thing. And then they knock off St. Joseph's and come home feeling like, hey, we went up there and won a couple games. Let's go home and take care of business. Then you get into Delaware State. They win their game against NC State in Raleigh by 4 as part of the SEC-ACC Challenge. Then you lose to UConn at home. They were ranked at the time 25. Then you run through New Mexico State, Arkansas Pine Bluff, UNO, and Northwestern State. Get an SEC play. And you open up on a three-game losing streak. But they didn't do them any favors, right? Texas opens up on the road at College Station. First official SEC game as a basketball program, and they send you to your arch rival, a team that had already been a part of our conference for a while, and you lose by 20. And then, hey, we're going to let you host the next game. We're going to send in the best team in the country in there, Auburn. And it was a game. Yeah, Texas made it a game. They lose by 5. And then, you know, Auburn was 2 at the time. We'll send number 1 Tennessee in next. So if anybody's got a beef, you know, we talked about how it seems that State's always a team that gets the short end of the stick when it comes to SEC basketball scheduling. You know, this year, I think it's the first year they didn't just put the screws to Chris Jans, even though there was a tough stretch there. But at least we didn't open in a hole. But Texas, 0-3 to start SEC play. And again, rivalry game, and then the number 1 and number 2 team in the country. And back-to-back. That's 2 of your home games, kids. And then you got to go to Oklahoma to play another rivalry game. You win that one by 4 to earn your first official SEC win against another former Big 12 team. Well, yeah, congratulations, guys. Now you got to go to Gainesville. And Florida killed them. They beat Missouri 61-53. They get the redemption game over the Aggies in the home-and-home 70-69. They go to Ole Miss, lose there by 3. And then they go to LSU and just drill them by 31 in the PMAC. You know how tough it is to win on the road, even at LSU, and even though those people are very fair-weathered about basketball. But to go down there and to exert yourself like that is notable. Arkansas then goes into Moody Center there in Austin, wins by 8. Texas loses at Vanderbilt. They go back home, and then they have to play Alabama, who was number 1 at the time, lose that one by 23. They get Kentucky at home, and it's still the notoriety game, right? It's still like, hey, I know Guns N' Roses may not be playing, you know, Madison Square Garden, but any chance to see Guns N' Roses, big deal. Conk that with Kentucky. Even though they're not their best, it's still Kentucky. Then you go to South Carolina, and you win that. Excuse me. They go to South Carolina. Remember we talked about how everybody was struggling on the road to South Carolina? Like, we go up there and win by 4 or 5. Auburn barely won. With so many teams that just narrowly escaped it. Well, South Carolina got Texas by 15. Then they go to Arkansas, lose in overtime by 5, and then they lose to Georgia this weekend at home considerably, 83-67. So, again, lost three games in a row, a game we got to get. They'll close it out at home against Oklahoma and then get ready for the NCAA SEC basketball tournament on March 12th. And it's so interesting, too. Like, the non-conference kind of whets your appetite a little bit, but SEC play kind of tells you who you are. And you're jockeying for position to get into postseason play. But that's what everybody pays attention to. Like a lot of people during the season, it may not be must-watch TV for everybody. But once we get in the tournament, even in the conference tournament, everybody's watching. Everybody's watching. And so State, obviously in a position to kind of help their seeding in the tournament. Dave Murray's been running a weekly article on that. It's kind of updating people as we go. Let's quickly kind of look inside the numbers here for Texas. I will admit, I have only seen some highlights of Texas. I have not watched them play this year. It's just so weird to me, even now, that they're in the SEC. So, like, if you don't play Mississippi State and you're one of these newcomers, one of these interlopers, it's not must-watch TV for me. But Trey Johnson, 27 games played, 27 games started. Did miss a couple of games, but he has been, a 20-point scorer for them this year. Arthur Kaluma, 12.8, and then Jordan Pope with 10.7. So three players averaging double digits, but Trey Johnson, obviously, the name to know in that respect. Rebounding has been a bit of a challenge for them. They're out-rebounding their opponents basically by one per game. This is where we're going to have to – we need Cam Matthews to be big here, for sure. Really no questions about it, but they're averaging 78 points a game. They're giving up about 71. So plus 7 in favor of the Longhorns. Shooting about 46%. Maybe, let's give them benefit of the doubt. We'll say 47. 36% from beyond the arc. Their opponents are shooting right at 43% and then 34% from the arc. And so, again, a lot of these numbers kind of come across as a 500 team, right? 75% from the line, which is not bad. And as I mentioned, just kind of plus 1 in rebounding. Handing out 13.4 assists a game. They've allowed about a dozen, so plus one, four maybe. 187 steals against 163. They do have 125 blocks, allowing 85. But, this is a game we got to win. This is a team that we should beat. And I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is. Obviously, Texas has talent. Maybe they hadn't played as well as they expected or hoped. And I know there's some other people, too, that are like, you know what, I'm glad to see Texas and Oklahoma struggle. They didn't in football, at least Texas didn't. Of course, Alabama, of course, would tell you Oklahoma didn't either. But you kind of understand my point. I think there's some other people that kind of look around, the league, and they're like, hey, I'm glad that Texas just didn't show up and start running the show over there. Not that I ever expected that. But, neither Texas or Oklahoma is really playing for anything meaningful right now. Let's take a quick look at the men's standings. Auburn won 6 in a row. They're now 15-1 in the conference. And so, it's over, right? And it's Auburn's playing for some bigger things. But they're going to be your regular season SEC champs. I'm sure it's already been announced. Florida and Alabama right there, 12-4. They're three games behind with 2 to play. So Auburn's officially clinched. Everybody else kind of playing for seeding. Tennessee is 11-5. Missouri, 10-6. And this is where things get a little bit interesting. Ole Miss 9-7, A&M 9-7, and then us and Vanderbilt and Kentucky are all there at 8-8. And so you start looking at tiebreakers and things like that. We really would love to be tied with Ole Miss because, of course, we won 2 games against them. You beat A&M, so you hold a tiebreaker there. You win at Vanderbilt, so you hold a tiebreaker there. But you did lose to Kentucky, right? And so when you think about this glut of teams and how important all this is, the tiebreakers kind of go our way among these teams, with the exception of Kentucky, which should give us a better opportunity to be seated. But, we're playing early in the tournament, and as we should. But, if you finish 9-9 or perhaps 10-8, you feel good about your lot in life. And then behind Kentucky, this is where things get – a little more spaced out, I guess. Georgia and Arkansas are 6-10. Texas 5-11. Oklahoma 4-12. LSU 3-13. And then South Carolina at the bottom 2-14. And it's so interesting to me that everybody gets a chance to go to Nashville, and then everybody has an opportunity to play. And it's only a matter of time before somebody like this gets hot and goes up there and does like a, you know, Dennis Felton type deal with Georgia years ago when they were ready to fire him, and he gets hot, ends up going to the NCAA tournament, so they had to bring him back another year. And you know, they beat us, which sucked. I think they had to play a doubleheader that day. But as it stands today, I have not done the math. Dave Murray did it for us. But as it stands today, we are the 9 seed in the tournament. With 2 games to play, we are the 9. And so Kentucky gets the 8 by virtue of the tiebreaker. And so kind of looking at this thing at kind of who we would be paired up against. We don't have it in bracket format. But it would be Texas against Arkansas. We put a winner of that game, as I understand his article. You can go check his math if you want. But, yeah, we're in a pretty good spot. Maybe not as good as some had hoped or expected, but we are in a good position, and we do fully expect to make the tournament. And I still believe we are a team that's capable of getting out of the first weekend, depending on matchups, right? It's going to depend on matchups. But I certainly expect us to win the first round game, and it's been forever since we have. And that's one of the things, too, that I hate to sound preachy about this, but there are a lot of people that we talk about, like, you know, tradition and things like that. And I've discussed on this show before that, you know, before Babe, we didn't have any tradition. We didn't. But it has been a while, right? It has been a while. We have not won an NCAA tournament game in a long time. And I think that's what people just want to feel like something's kind of moving forward here. Our last win in the NCAA tournament was in 2008 against Oregon. We won that game 76-69. We gave Memphis all they wanted and then some. And that was we won the 8-9 game, and we had to play Memphis. We lose by 3. And you guys all felt like I did, and we felt like we should have won the game. 2009, we make the tournament, and we lose by 13 in the 13-4 game. Washington gets us. And we get upset in 2019, Ben Howland's lone NCAA tournament game. It's still one of those games, too. It just makes no sense to me. I don't even like talking about it. But we blew it and lose by 4. And then Chris Jans, of course, now on the verge of going to his third straight game. We lose in the first 4 game by 1 to Pittsburgh, and it hurt. And then last year, we got absolutely walloped by Michigan State, 69-51. It never felt like after like the first 6-7 minutes of that game, we were in the game. So no NCAA tournament wins for Mississippi State in 17 years. It's true. It's true. And of course, we didn't go for years because of the state legislature. But even kind of removing from that, you know, really, we go in 91 and we get upset. Of course, we get to the Sweet 16 in 95 and we Final Four in 96. And then we don't go back again in 2002. And so not a ton of appearances in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, we can kind of move on from, well, they didn't let us go. I mean, it's like 2 generations ago now, 3 generations ago now. So all we can think about now is the present and kind of move forward here. But again, Chris Jans on the verge of doing something that's only been done one time in school history, and that's make 3 consecutive NCAA tournaments. And, of course, State did that under Rick Stansberry 4 times. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Find out everything you need to know. Their Facebook page pops up. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities that are available to you and your guests. The full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the great back porch area, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 2 soon-to-be 3 baths. It's the all-renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands, just off 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. How cool is that? So if you're looking to bring a large group to town, instead of going and getting 5 Airbnbs or 5 hotel rooms, get everybody under one roof. We say it all the time. We don't get together enough. So you should plan the trip and let everybody know, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring all the cousins in. We're going to bring all the sisters in. We're going to bring all the kids in. We have a great time. Your mom would be thrilled. Your dad, too. They have all the kids, all the grandkids under one roof. So you guys can kind of recreate together. And of course, with that full-service kitchen, cook up a meal right then and there. Now, when you Google, you're going to have Airbnb pop up, VRBO pop up. But if you book through the Evolve website, I can save you a little money. Use promo code BSR10. That's beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. You'll be glad you did. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, a couple of notes I want to pass along before we get into the women's basketball segment of the show. Mississippi State baseball game against Southern Miss, originally scheduled for Tuesday, has now been pushed back to Wednesday at 4 o'clock due to the threat of inclement weather. So for your planning purposes, Wednesday, 4 p.m. Also, some troubling news with a former Mississippi State player. Former Mississippi State defensive lineman Jonathan Calvin and his fiance apparently have been wounded in an early morning shooting Sunday morning at a bar in Houston, Texas. The two were recently engaged. Not exactly sure if that was part of the celebration or not, but they are allegedly two of the five victims of the shooting. Police are investigating, and just want to share that to keep Jonathan, his fiance, and all the victims of this needless tragedy in your thoughts and prayers. And it's ironic that we were just out there. The Bulldog family was just out there for baseball. But keep Jonathan Calvin on your heart and in your minds and in your prayers. His mom has posted a couple of updates on Facebook. Apparently, according to her, the fiance is still in critical condition. And not exactly sure of Jonathan's condition at this point, other than the fact that he is still alive. So wanted to share that with all of you. Okay, women's basketball, you know, the Bulldogs last week went pretty much as we expected, right? We figured we'd lose to Texas, and that proved to be a much better game than I think anybody expected, except for maybe Sam Purcell and his crew. They gave Texas all they wanted and then some. And good for Sam. Not that we believe in moral victories, but it's good to see us play well against the top-rated team in the country, especially this time of year. Of course, State loses that ball game 68-64. And then over the weekend, we go to Auburn, and it's so difficult to beat a team twice in one year, especially having to go to their place for the second trip, which, again, kind of speaks so well of Chris Jans and the men taking care of Ole Miss this year. But Auburn came out guns a-blazing on senior night and had a 17-9 lead after one. And right now I'm thinking this is going to be one of those games. I mean, we're just going to be, you know, we get so close to beating Texas and then we're going to lose a game we shouldn't. Well, we bounce back a little bit here, outscore them by one, and it's a 7-point Auburn lead at the break. And then State erases that deficit and takes a 1-point lead after three and then ultimately wins the game. 3-point advantage there in the fourth quarter to win 73-66. Maybe that's not correct. Maybe my math is off. But, yeah, that's right, because we outscored them by 11 in the third quarter. But nevertheless, Bulldogs now 20-10 overall, 7-9 in the league. We were hoping to finish in the top half of the league. We did not, right there in the meaty part of the curve. Auburn finishes 12-17, 3-13 in the league. And now we all get ready for SEC play. And so let's take a quick look at, rather than breaking down the game, let's take a look at the bracket. Bulldogs going to be in action 5 p.m. on Wednesday. So that'll conflict with your baseball watching needs, but you can flip back and forth. Going to play Missouri. This is a good matchup for State. It's a game, obviously, we didn't have Destin McFaul. We went and played up there the first time, and we lose up there. A game that ultimately cost us some pretty important spots in the standings, if I can get it out. So I like the matchup, and I think this is a team we should have some confidence against, a team that we should have beaten, and we were without one of our better players. So we'll see how things progress there. But your Wednesday matchups. Number 16 seed Texas A&M will play number 9 Tennessee. Did you expect Tennessee to finish in the bottom half of the league? I didn't think you did, but they did. That's going to be the 10 a.m. game on Wednesday. Game number 2, Arkansas and Georgia. That'll be the 12:30 game. It's 13 seed Arkansas against number 12 Georgia. So somebody is destined to get a win. And then there's our game is the third game. Then ICAP, Auburn, and Florida. Is this the end of the road for Johnny Harris? I guess we'll see. All right, so second round matchups. The winner of A&M Tennessee will play Vanderbilt. And again, I look at that and I begin to think, you know, we went up there and won that game, but we had a golden opportunity to finish in that spot or better this year. Game number six, which will be the second of the day on Thursday, the winner of Arkansas-Georgia will take on number 5 Oklahoma, a team that we defeated. The Bulldogs, the winner of the Mississippi State-Missouri game, will take on Ole Miss at the 5 p.m. game on Thursday. And then, of course, you get into the nightcap, and so the winner of Auburn-Florida will take on Alabama. And, of course, the top four seeds get the double bye. That used to be us. That's South Carolina, Texas, LSU, and Kentucky. And ultimately, the number one seed was decided by a coin flip between South Carolina and Texas. And if you watch Friday Night Lights, there ain't no jinxes. There ain't no jinxes, according to Billy Bob Thornton. But, at the end of the day, South Carolina and Texas on opposite sides of the bracket. I don't know that one is any easier than the other, to be honest with you. Just my take on it. I guess if you're Vic Schaefer, you probably don't like the fact that South Carolina gets Kentucky or should get Kentucky in the semifinals and you get LSU. You know, so a little bit of advantage, I guess, to winning that coin flip. But at the end of the day, the SEC tournament's not going to decide a whole lot about the seeding overall. Now, if you're South Carolina, you feel like, hey, you know, you're in a good position to get the one, and you could beat Texas. Maybe you're the number one overall seed, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You know, you're a one in your side of the bracket, as will Texas be if the chalk holds. But interesting. You know, interesting the way it all kind of works out. And so here we are. Mississippi State now again. 20-10, 7-9. At the beginning of the year, I think if we thought, hey, we're going to win 20 games, 21-22, we said, yeah, that's probably about on par. But I think we hope to finish at least 8-8 and have a winning record. And, of course, that game at Missouri and, of course, the game at Florida, you flip that, it's a different dynamic, right? So we're capable of beating anybody. We're capable of losing to anybody. I like the days when we were feared. But at the end of the day, it kind of is what it is. And so, we look forward to all that kind of shaking loose. A lot of things happening this week for Mississippi State. Again, so Wednesday, no action in men's basketball Wednesday. But plenty of other sports going on Wednesday with the women SEC tournament kicking off its first day and, of course, a lot of baseball. But that just kind of shows me that we can turn our full attention towards Texas. Big week for the Bulldogs. Big week for the Bulldogs in every respect, because these are important games that directly impact our seeding. So Tuesday night, 7 p.m., tip-off men's basketball against Texas, last home game of the year, because we're not going to be in the NIT. So last chance to see Mississippi State play in Humphrey Coliseum this year. So make plans to attend if you haven't already. It's a good team. And again, this is an important game. We really want to avoid that 8-9 line if at all possible. And, of course, it's all within our reach. When you start thinking about the tournament on the women's side of things, I think Mississippi State is in right now, but I think everybody would feel much more affirmed to win a game. And certainly if you win two and knock off Ole Miss, who was the 7, you feel really good about your postseason prospects. So, again, I think we're in. You need to beat Missouri. You lose to Missouri, a team that finished next to last in this conference. You know, who knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, let's just be honest about that. If we lose that game, we probably don't deserve to go. I mean, when it's all said and done, you got a losing record in conference and you lose to the next to last place team in the league twice. You know, you look at the totality of the season, but those are not good optics. I mean, it just kind of is what it is. But, Yeah, it'd be great to get both the men and the women in the NCAA tournament. Again, we feel locked in with the men. Women feel good about it, but man, it's like to see some postseason wins in the SEC tournament. Man, we'd love to be able to get two, right? You get two and then play Texas. You know, no matter how that thing turns out, I think you feel like you've done your job and then some in the SEC Women's Tournament. So we'll be back on Wednesday. It's a busy week for me, too. We'll be back on Wednesday and be able to kind of preview that ball game against Southern Miss on the baseball side. We'll look ahead to the women's matchup against Missouri and hopefully be recapping a Mississippi State men's basketball win over the University of Texas. If you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can order signed copies of The Dude. I've got some personalizations that I've got to do, and so I will get up with them soon, and we'll get those books out to you. So if you have ordered books through the website and you need personalization, they hadn't been personalized yet. So we will get together this week and get that taken care of for you. At least that's the plan. But if you just need a signed copy, you can get it there. All of my sports titles are there. That's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, and of course, The Dude. We'll get cracking on something else here pretty soon. I'm just not quite ready to get going, but we'll do it soon. We'll give you guys an announcement soon. It takes a lot out of me to write these books. It really does. And no matter how hard you work, you still make some mistakes, and that kind of weighs on you a little bit too. But The Dude's still in the top 10 of the Mississippi bestsellers list. I'm very grateful for that. It's been nominated for some pretty cool awards too, so we'll see what comes of that. We'll find out about all that stuff, I think May. I think that's right. But that's it for today, man. We'll see you guys on Wednesday. It's good to be home. It's good to be back in Starkville. Look forward to seeing you guys out at The Dude. And, of course, so much meaningful basketball left to be played. Let's be sure we enjoy that. You look forward to all these things all year long. And now, you know, how a season is defined is on how it ends, right? Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.